This is an exclusive excerpt from the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
The late Joan Rivers would have been happy with the Hollywood send-off she got at her funeral, from the New York Gay Men's Chorus singing show tunes to Howard Stern giving the eulogy. There were body moments, spectacular Broadway performances, and laughter. Rivers was a household name known for poking fun at everyone, including herself. But she was much more than what the public saw. Tani Carr is an author and relationship expert who at one time worked for Joan. She also had a small part in her movie, Rabbit Test. Tani is on the line with us right now from California. Hi, Tani.
Hello there, Peter. Nice to be with you and your audience.
Nice to talk to you. And my condolences, obviously, to the passing of a friend and a former work colleague.
Yes, absolutely.
So what was the real Joan Rivers like? I had an opportunity to meet her on a couple of occasions backstage in Montreal, but from your perspective, what was the real Joan Rivers like?
Well, I had a unique opportunity because I was working out of her home. So the Joan Rivers that is in front of the audience is that performer, is that entertainer. I found her to be extremely genuine, down to earth, and all business. You know, the business of comedy is a serious business. Anybody who can maintain the laughter for audiences over an extended period of time knows that it takes a huge amount of effort and work to make it look like it's effortless and stuff just rolls off your tongue. She was very professional, very nice, very giving, very genuine. I found her to be just very genuine and a genuinely nice and very giving person. An example of that is that she had a closet called her gift closet, and when she'd be out traveling or she'd go into Beverly Hills, she would find things at Tiffany's, find things at different lovely retail stores. She would have them gift wrapped, put them in a closet, and when she went someplace or was visiting somebody or was doing an interview, she would go into the closet and pull out something because she would want to give a gift to the person that she was meeting with or whatever, depending on the individual. So that's pretty special for an individual to do, because she sure didn't have to.
Right. Now, as you described her, there's a sense of surprise in the personality that Joan was in real life. Was it a surprise to you when you met her?
No, it wasn't, because I had by that time already worked on her movie Rabbit Test. Enjoyed working with her. Again, I had a small part. I was happened to be in some scenes with Billy Crystal, and I had a chance to get to meet her then. But also, my sister-in-law had been her personal assistant for 2 years, so I knew from her the sort of individual that Joan was, and she was everything that my sister-in-law had said that she would be, and then some. It was just nice to have the personal experience with her to see for myself.
Do you think, and again, the time frame we're talking about when you were working with her is quite a few years ago, correct?
Right. That would have been in the 1977, 78 was that period of time.
Had you kept in contact with Joan through the years?
Do you know, I did for a short time, because it turned out that the scenes that I was in with Billy Crystal were the scenes that she used to promote that movie, Rabbit Test, all over the country. So I saw her at the studio for that. But I must say that because of her long-term relationship with my sister-in-law, that for 5-6 years after Barbara was no longer working for her, she maintained contact with Joan, and whenever my brother and her were in Las Vegas, Joan invited them to the show, she comped them, she was always extremely generous, and she maintained that relationship, which I must say is consistent with her, with all the people that have worked for her, that she has maintained relationships over long periods of time. She's very, very loyal to the people that work for her.
She has left behind an amazing legacy of comedy, not only the pioneering fact of what she did as the type of comedy she did, but even a pioneer as a woman telling jokes on stage. Even as far back as when you worked with her then, she had a reputation for what she had done up until that point. Was she aware of her legacy even then?
You know, I'm not so sure that she was aware of her legacy. I don't think that she thought in those terms. I do think that she was committed to her craft and expanding it to whatever degree she could. There have been video interviews, I think, on YouTube of her talking about the fact that while she was delighted that there were other comedians that followed her in her footsteps, that thanked her for her contributions, she was so much out in front and creating her future that she wasn't looking necessarily to be some icon, but she was very dedicated to her craft and really worked at it, and I'm sure she got pleasure out of her inspiration to other folks in that field.
It almost sounds like her life could be described as the Italian racing style, full speed ahead and no rearview mirror.
That's great. I may use that sometime. That's a good way to describe it. She definitely was racing toward, you know, what else can I do? What else can I do, for sure? As even certainly after Edgar died, she really realized that, hey, now it's up to me. I have a daughter to raise to be with, and I really need to really, really move on from this tragedy, which definitely impacted her greatly.
And I know for a bit of time after Edgar's death that there was a bit of a rift between herself and Melissa, which both of them overcame.
Well, they both overcame it, which really in any family relationship, these things happen, not so much in the public eye. But keep in mind that when I was working for her and when I knew her, Melissa was only 8 years old. So, and the fact of the matter is that both Joan and Edgar were very doting parents. They both went to pick up Melissa at school every day. They had servants that could have done that, the household help. But they were committed to being parents with her. They went to the Girl Scout meetings. They did so much with Melissa. But that was the era that I was involved with her. But not surprising, sometimes people do have rifts within families, and just very, very happy that they were able to resolve those.
I mentioned in the introduction her send-off in New York, and it was something that she actually wrote about in one of her books, the type of funeral that she wanted to have. You think she would have been happy with that?
I think she would have been thrilled. I think she would have been absolutely thrilled. What was amazing to me was the huge turnout of A-list celebs from different areas of the arts who showed up for her funeral. It was, I mean, yes, I knew she was popular, and I knew she had a broad range of friends and people that she's been friends with for many years. But, oh, my gosh, to see the number of people that came together to honor her was really inspiring, and I very much enjoyed seeing that.
Well, she was an inspiration to many. She had an amazing career. She's left a great legacy, whether she knew it or not. She has done that. I thank you for talking with us about Joan, but I want to, before we let you go, talk a little bit about you, because you have a pretty remarkable story yourself, and it's something that you wrote about in your book called 10 Weeks to Love. Can you tell us about that?
Well, you know, I've been a writer and PR person. I've worked in television, radio for 40 years, and I finally wrote my book about how I met my husband, who's 16 years my junior, and we got married after 1 month of meeting, and it was 28 years now, and he still thinks I'm eye candy. So I know what I did to transform myself from miserable and divorced, and I wrote about it in the book, and it's a fun read, and I'm changing people's lives, and I must tell you how gratifying that is.
Now, as you said, you were divorced. As a matter of fact, to be honest, you were divorced twice, right?
Yes. Yes, I was divorced twice. And at 45, I had to start over again. And that was certainly difficult.
And as I mentioned in the introduction, you are an author and a relationship expert. So is it through the stumbles that you took earlier in your life that led you to becoming a relationship expert?
Absolutely. No question about it. I had some harsh lessons to learn, and sometimes we have to have our necessity level rise up and smack us in the face to kind of go, I need to make some changes here. And the changes were all internal. They were not external changes. People, the number one question I get asked is, where do you go to find love? And I have to tell those people, it is almost irrelevant, because I never could have planned how I met my husband. It's more about you being open to finding love, and you getting rid of your own stumbling blocks, which is really what the book is about. But it's done in a very upbeat, funny, and entertaining way. At least that's what I'm told by the people that have read it.
Well, actually, one of the things I want to ask you is the fact that you did have these hardships earlier in life where you stumbled through a couple of relationships. Do you think you had to do that to get to the point where you were when you met your husband-to-be?
You know, I would love to be able to answer that and say, no, I didn't need to go through that. But the truth is, each of us has an individual journey that we're on, and we have to do whatever we do. Some folks are fortunate enough, and I've met a bunch of them, who found their true love early on, been married forever, thrilled to be together. There are lots of people out there like that. This was not my situation. It just wasn't. I mean, I wish I could say that it was, but hopefully through my book, people can get this idea. I don't have to go through that. Tawny already went through it. Let me learn from her. Let me stand on her shoulders, and then I won't have to. And that's what I genuinely hope. It's not only to help older folks reinvent themselves, if that's what they need to do, to find the loves of their lives, but to help younger people who haven't been down that road, who don't need to, with the right direction. So that's my hope anyway.
The book is called 10 Weeks to Love, and people can find out more information by going to your website, which is 10weekstolove.com, and that's numerical 10, weeks, numerical 2, love.com. And again, thank you very much for talking about Joan Rivers and sharing your memories of her. I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate being able to say good things about this amazing woman. So thanks for asking me, Peter. I appreciate it.
Relationship expert Tanny Carr. It was great to talk about Joan Rivers from someone who worked with her. And again, you can find out more about Tanny's book, 10 Weeks to Love, by going to her website. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0265, and you'll find links to her site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly.
You've just heard an exclusive excerpt from the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. To hear any or all of the full hour-long shows, visit thestufffile.com. Stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's thestufffile.com. A presentation of Flying Fish Communications.